Mr. Bowie and his brass fantasy band with the old classic In the Still of the Night. It's from his 1998 album, The Odyssey of Funk and Popular Music. He died a year later of liver cancer at the age of 58. I know his wife quite well. She was very, very instrumental when I edited the City Sun. She was a graphic artist, and she would help me put the paper together. Had a long relationship with her. And, of course, I love Lester Bowie's music. Just playful, but masterful at the same time. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. The year's only a couple of days old, and we have more than enough stuff to talk about. So I'm interested in what it is you have to say, what you find to be important and significant, and you would want to share it at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. What's on your mind today that you'd like to free it of? There's a lot. There's a lot going on. And I just want to say one thing. This is just a personal note. Thank you so much, all of you, for your continued good wishes for my health and encouraging me to keep moving, which is what I'm trying to do. One foot in front of the other, and that's the big complication of things. Just putting one foot in front of the other and keeping moving. All right. So what's on your mind today? What's troubling you? What observations would you like to share? What opinions would you like to share? And of course, we want them to be informed opinions, not just blather, but informed opinions that would cause us to think and rethink some of the things that are on our minds. All right, I'm waiting for you. And I see you kind of slow today. What's going on? You're slowing down. You need some energy. I like energetic people. And okay, Henry from Chicago. I'm sorry I said that. I didn't mean to imply that you were slow.
Yeah, I was on the line, and I'm like, what is she talking about?
No, you're not slow at all. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm hanging in there, Henry. So what's all on right, your mind that you would like to free up?
Okay, so before I start, I want to wish you and the PRN and Lead Story listeners a happy and prosperous new year.
Thank you.
It's been last year since I talked to you guys. So I wanted to give you an update from Chicago politics. I think about a month ago or a little bit before that, I informed you and the Lead Stories listeners that a powerful alderman, Ed Burke, his office was raided by the FBI, his aldermanic office. Now, yesterday, indictments came from the federal government. Mr. Burke has been formally charged with shaking down a business owner for legal services. And I guess he was using his aldermanic privileges. Now, just to update everybody who didn't hear me last time, Ed Burke is a alderman in Chicago, one of probably the most powerful aldermen in Chicago. He is also the head of the finance committee, which is basically what happens is that any money the city spends, it runs through his desk before it goes to the mayor. So that's how much power he wields. And also, too, he's been a longtime alderman. He was actually an opponent of Mayor Harold Washington, who was the first black mayor of Chicago. in the what they call the Council Wars, the 29 versus 21. Him and Mr. Edward Podolyak, who has also been indicted for corruption.
Is there a while anybody ago. In Chicago who is not yet indicted?
I mean, there's a lot of people not indicted, but, you know, they just haven't been caught yet.
Exactly. So the most important word is yet.
Yeah.
Not indicted yet. Okay.
Yeah. So the thing is that with these charges that came up yesterday, what was interesting about it is apparently he's been wiretapped for a while since the feds have been watching him. But what was interesting is the specifics of this indictment was from a restaurant owner who Burke was trying to make him buy his legal services. Now, what's so interesting is this restaurant owner owns a Burger King on the block where Laquan McDonald was killed, which was pretty. I mean, I don't know if this connects, but it was just interesting that this particular owner owns the McDonald's, and this is the same Burger King where the Chicago police was, confiscated the tapes of that killing, and that's why a lot of people did not see that killing until a year later, when the city was holding on to the tapes, but. It's an interesting dynamic with Alderman Burke because, as I stated before, this year Chicago's going to go into a different direction. Apparently the old guard, which is, you know, what we dub as the machine here, the Democratic machine here, is starting to fall apart. With Rahm Emanuel not running, we've got about 17 candidates now. I think the last count I said was 21, but a couple have fell off due to not being able to challenge the signature. So a couple of people have fell off the roll, and Chicago is going into a different direction. We don't know what this direction is, but it's an opportunity for the people to take control of the city again. Then this is the opportunity, this is their time, this is our time to get control of Chicago back again, because if this does not happen now, then we will be seeing more corruption in the next, you know, maybe 3 or 4 decades again.
So are you beginning to see evidence of organization?
We are... just not on a scale where which we, well, here's the thing, because the problem is there are a couple of candidates who are running for mayor, and there's some aldermanic races that we're kind of keeping an eye on. However, even though the political machine here in Chicago is starting to fall, they still have a lot of money to throw around. And there has been a lot of grassroots organizations and a lot of grassroots movement to try to get some of these candidates and some of these aldermanic candidates into office. So there can be a change. But right now, we're still behind. And we need to catch up. We need to seriously catch up. One of the candidates that is running is unfortunately Mayor Daley's brother, who has the most money to spend. However, his name is not very popular nowadays. So we really don't think he, you know, even though he's going to be spending a lot of money in this mayoral running, there doesn't seem to be a lot of popularity because of his name Daley. Which is Bill Daley, who I believe he used to be the Obama's chief of staff after Rahm Emanuel left, I think. But what's also interesting, too, going back to Ed Burke, Ed Burke was the lawyer who saved, who at the time was president candidate Donald Trump, $13 million of taxes off of his Trump Tower that he has here in Chicago. So that's also interesting about him as well. It also says that, you know, Democrats, Republicans, they're no difference. They'll work together.
No difference. Thanks, Henry, for your update. Good to hear from you. And keep safe in the Windy City. Brad from Brentwood, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
Best of health to the new year to you.
I know you've had challenges.
I just want to point out what happened last night. Somebody's throwing a temper tantrum because he doesn't get his wall, which is really not going to be effective anyway. Walls can't sink, you know, so humans can get around walls. But because he didn't get his wall, he had three...
I just want to interrupt for a second. There are some feedback that we're getting on your end. Is your radio on or something?
That's on? In the back. Yes, it is. I'll turn you down. Let me turn you, Trees, down here.
Thank you.
So what he had on last night looked like three guys from WWF. Three bald guys were like police authority types or something, you know, in jackets, standing next to him. And how come every time a politician's got to talk about a murder or talk about some serious, they have to have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 people behind them with that turned down mouth. Anyway, so he had these three thugs come on and say, oh no, you have to have this wall. That was it. How infantile is this? He didn't give statistics. He didn't discuss it in depth. And I don't want to go all into the let's bash Trump thing, you know, but this guy is not a statesman. So it was just so ridiculous. And after we've come this far, that people haven't gotten paid, and that this government gets upset, upended, the government employees get upended on a somewhat regular basis. Why would he just come up with this cheesy thug presentation? Is that the best what supposed to be the leader of the free world can do? And I know you know what I mean.
There's another question also to be asked. I mean, it's as if the news people don't know what news is. I mean, if Donald Trump burps, it's a news item. I mean, you ought to know by now what is a news story and what is not.
They don't know how to present anything without using that family's name with a K. And that's got nothing to do with this stuff. It's just ridiculous. There's no news.
Well, yeah. I just want to say that here is the report for the month of December from the Bureau of Labor Statistics giving what is being treated as an encouraging report about employment in terms of jobs added to the economy, and it's just a little bit more than 300,000 jobs. And they're pumping
the story.
But in the meantime, 800,000 federal employees have been either furloughed of that number, furloughed and are compelled to work without pay. And we seem to think that this is normal.
Yeah, it's not normal.
800,000 people.
I also
want to
mention while we're there, if I may, some of these people are not entitled to stop working. Maybe in some legal argument they are, but they're still employed and waiting for that paycheck and supposedly going to get paid. Now, how come a lot of them aren't doing their job? And I understand some of them aren't supposed to be at this point. So they're saying...
So the
Indians are near some park are going and emptying the toilet, emptying the basin where the toilet stuff goes, because they're dependent on it. They're not dependent on the toilet. They're dependent on tourism for their community. So they're going to the national park where the national employee is supposed to empty this stuff. The national employee is not emptying it. So should the national employee get paid back wages? He didn't do his job. It's just
who should get paid and who should not get paid. The question is, how is it permissible that the president by himself decided arbitrarily, basically to stage a stick-up? It's like not unlike somebody walking into a bank and holding the bank up and saying, look, if you don't give me what I want, I'll kill everybody in here. That's exactly the scenario that we have.
The president decided,
I want my wall. I got to get it by any means necessary. And if you don't give me the wall, I will disrupt employment for 800,000 employees, federal employees, supposedly, presumably covered by labor laws and covered by a contract. So this is the question. This is the question. It's not about the reassignment of workers. That, too, has to be a point of negotiation. You can't just switch people around like you do at Mar-a-Lago or any one of your underperforming golf courses. There are laws in this country. And you cannot pull a stick up like that. Thanks a lot, Brad, for your call.
I worked for Donald years ago just on a contract. I made a scale model for him when he wanted to build Television City in New York. So the model was made, but it was so massive that the city said, you can't build this. But I didn't get fired, and I did get paid. But, you know, I was a lowly worker, so I didn't make a lot of money.
Well, Trump is very careful about who he pays and how much.
Yeah, well, no, the boss, you know, made the money. I was just a worker.
Thank you for your call. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, 888-874-4888. What's on your mind today?
Hi, good day to you, Therese.
Hello.
I want to bring up a few things. It's kind of interesting.
You and I are done because we can't take another half hour. So tighten up your presentation.
I don't know if anyone has seen that Giuliani has said that they should treat WikiLeaks and Julius Assange similarly to how eventually the release of the Pentagon Papers was treated. And I kind of find it interesting that these so-called progressives have missed something like that. I also want to say that we are living in a time of great propaganda. I also want to point out that during the Reagan administration, there were 8 shutdowns. During Bush, there was a shutdown. During Bill Clinton's administration, there was a 21-day shutdown. And during Barack Obama, there was a 17-day shutdown. I also want to point out that I personally believe that this, and I am one who supports, I believe that most of the countries where people are trying to come to this country, not just believe, I know it, it's because of America's doings that created problems in these countries. For example, Honduras is one, and that was caused by Hillary Clinton, not only because of this support of the overthrow of Zelaya, which also led to the murder of Berta Cáceres, that sister who was working for the environmental justice. And we're ignoring that. I do believe that all these people coming, rushing supposedly across the border, it's being staged by George Soros and the Obamas and the Clintons, just like how suddenly those buses were staged.
How are you going to state that without any facts to support it?
There are certain things that, but I'm saying, remember what I said, and I said, I believe, I didn't say it is
that
so.
That doesn't make a difference. I mean, I believe the world is square, so is it?
No, I'm talking about, there are certain things that, for example, when 9/11 occurred, when the first thing I said to myself, I said, that was staged. And I didn't have facts to back it up, but as I started doing research, you know, there are certain conclusions you can draw based on history. You can, not necessarily conclusions, I'm talking about suspicions. And I'm saying to you, I'm suspicious that this is so. And my reason for saying that is, how is it suddenly thousands of people are just marching towards the border? I think that we are being gullible purposely because we don't want to face the truth. And I think that we are being disingenuous. And I think that we should be bringing to task what Obama and Hillary did to Libya more so than we are responding to Trump's present behavior. And I'm going to say this, and I mean this from the bottom of my seat. You all deserve Trump based on the fact that you let Obama and Hillary get away with the murder of Gaddafi and also the killing of all those people in Iraq. All of you deserve Trump, and sit down and enjoy the ride until you bring to justice those who are responsible for the murder of all those millions of Iraqis. And I think everyone should be silent until you talk about the wickedness of the previous administration. Enjoy Trump's ride. And I'm not a Trump supporter, but I'm saying enjoy it until you are.
Well, that's what he said. That's what Trump himself says. Enjoy the ride. Haters, yes. Enjoy the ride. That's what he's saying, mocking even people who are criticizing him, and with good cause. He says, haters, enjoy the ride.
I'm saying to you is...
You what?
Yeah, hello?
Yes, I'm trying to hear what you said.
What I'm saying to you is, I'm saying it's a double standard, and until you quit the double standard, enjoy the ride. That's what I'm saying. If there was no double standard, then I would not say that. I'd say protest against Trump. But I'm saying when the protest is one-sided, then I will not support that protest. That's the point I'm making. I think we are hypocritical. And when you, if you're going to think that what Trump is doing is worse than all the previous wickedness that have occurred, then I would say that we too are just as wicked. And we don't want to admit that. We're just mad. Imagine, we are more disgruntled about Trump embarrassing us than we are about the murders of people in the world. That's sad.
Yeah, but I don't think that that's a correct assessment. I think well, again, you think so. Okay, I appreciate that. That's what you think.
I know so.
But it is not necessarily an accurate picture. There is great resistance, and it is growing. You see it in France. You see it in Britain. You see it in pockets all over the world where people are beginning to demand accountability at a level they hadn't before. We, however, specifically in the United States, we have been remiss in holding the government accountable for a long time. And that's why, you know, I've been talking about Hillary Clinton and the Clintons and what they've done all over the world for how many years now? Like three years of detailed information. People listening to this program have information that not even the government has. But there hasn't been movement to make them accountable.
But that's what I'm saying, Utrecht. That's what I'm saying.
But that is not a reason to simply do a blanket indictment of people and say, well, you didn't do your job, therefore you deserve exactly what you get. And that's not true. We have people who have been working diligently in the areas that they have some kind of influence in. They've been working. The difficulty that you have, like in any other a situation like this, is resistance, organized, government-sanctioned resistance. There's only, I mean, people don't own the courts. People can't commandeer the courts. We had a president that just basically stuck up the country with 800,000 people's jobs on the line. And the news, people who are supposed to be competent at discerning what the issue is, they keep telling us about, well, the fight, the latest fight today between Nancy Pelosi and Schumer, Chuck Schumer, and Trump and his people. That's not the story. The story is that the president of the United States has taken it upon himself, despite the law, to behave this way and to cause incredible anguish and anxiety and inconvenience and loss of pay for 800. I keep repeating the figure as if, you know, I'm aghast that people don't appreciate this number. 800,000 people.
But you choose, this was true of all the other shutdowns.
It doesn't matter. We're talking about this one now.
You got to always speak in context. If you're not speaking in context, then you're not Uchis, you have to always speak in context, and especially in historical context. And if you're not speaking in context, then you're being disingenuous.
But no president. This is a precedent-setting thing in terms of numbers. No president, even if they had a shutdown or called a shutdown, 800,000 people?
It was the same when Bill Clinton's shutdown lasted 21 days.
Not 800,000 people.
We both should go do some research on that then, Utrecht.
No, I have some figures. I don't have them immediately with me, but I have been researching this because this is insane. And we're being very casual about it. Oh, well, eventually it will work itself out. The fact is, these are the actions of a rogue president, and he still doesn't get it. And people in Congress, this is year two of his presidency, and we have had no real cogent plan to control this president. I mean, not even his military people are
What cogent plan did we have to stop the invasion of Libya?
Listen, you don't get points for taking an argument that is very specific and transferring it to another day and another time. You don't get any points.
I think you're missing my point, Uchis. Talking about consistency.
Libya was Libya. This is the situation now, and we're discussing the situation now. We cannot, as you would agree, we cannot today, you and I, we cannot fix anything of years ago. We can't fix it.
Maybe your outrage does not match my outrage. Maybe that's why we're having such a disagreement.
This is of comparing outrage. And let me tell you, I am extremely outraged because I was very, very active in the labor union movement. I'm very outraged. But it does not get us anywhere with comparative analysis. What we're interested in is solving a problem that exists here and now. We cannot undo what was done 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago. We can't undo that. But we can and we're in a position to do something about a problem that exists now. That's my point. It doesn't negate the validity of your argument about what was done. The historical record shows that you're correct. Hillary Clinton has yet to be accountable for her actions, not just in Libya, but all over the world.
Right.
The actions in Libya are of the same kind of weight as the Clintons' actions all over Africa. What do you say then about you're extracting Libya? I'm asking you. You're not discussing the role of the Clintons in distributing bogus HIV drugs all over
Africa. Of course, I have put that on Facebook about the Clintons and Bill Gates doing HIV drugs in Kenya, etc. I have done that on Facebook.
But here's what I want to say to you. You're a very smart guy, and you're conscious and cognizant of issues that are important. But you have to learn how to argue and debate. You're asking me to meet you on the point of some kind of moral equivalency. And to me, there isn't one. The facts about Donald Trump and his actions with regard to 800,000 government workers, that's here and now. Let's deal with that. And we don't get a stronger argument by linking what's happening now to what happened 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. They have their own context. They have their own history. And they have their own outcome. We are here. We are in the here and now. What is so difficult about dealing with the here and now? Why do we have to go back and start from square one? That is not going to help us solve the problem now. This is my constant complaint with you. In order to understand the problem today, we have to go back and, to the Mesozoic era and revisit stuff for the sake of revisiting stuff. No, it is not going to help us act on the problem that we have now. And it's a false equivalency, really. You're going to tell me that there is a basis for comparison between U.S. Actions in Libya and 800,000 workers being penalized for no reason? You're going to tell me that there is something there? No.
Yes, what I'm saying to you, Lutris, the point I'm making, if somebody commits a crime, and we're allowing them to run around, making book deals, etc. You know, making appearances on TV.
Who are the they? They are allowing. Who are the they that are doing the allowing?
We the people. We the people. While we are outraged about this, we're posting pictures of these criminals who killed millions of people, and we whenever they show up, we applaud them, and we don't say, jail them for those murders.
You're saying, you just included everybody in a crime, just with that statement. We are not doing that. We, the people, are not doing that.
We are allowing it.
Well,
and we are facilitating it by our very complacent behaviors.
All right. Well, if you're making the case that we have been complacent. Yeah, I would agree with you. There's no quarrel there. But you make leaps of judgment and you combine things that are not really of equal value, equal merit. And so you destroy your own argument. And I want you to get into the habit of making strong arguments. But you start talking apples, and then soon enough you're throwing in oranges. And then you seem to think that it's a logical shift. It isn't. It isn't a logical shift. There are two separate things happening in two different periods of time under two different sets of circumstances. And we have to appreciate that. You can't make the leap just because you think they are linked. They're not linked necessarily. But you have to recognize that and strengthen your argument by making logical shifts in your argument, knowing that Gaddafi and the assassination of Muammar Gaddafi is not on the same plane as what is happening or what will soon happen to close to 800,000 workers. Two different things.
They're not going to die like the 1 million who died in Iraq.
Oh, see, here we go again. Does it matter now? Do we have to get into a discussion about the merits of how one dies?
No. I think you're missing my point, Yusrita, and I think you're purposely missing my point.
I'm getting your point, and I'm getting frustrated with the fact that you refuse to see what it is I'm trying to say to you.
I am equally frustrated that you don't see the parallels that I am drawing.
Okay, then let's agree we don't see each other's parallels.
No, I'm saying that we both, I think you're missing my point, and I don't think I'm missing your point. I think you are missing my point, and I am drawing parallels, and I'm speaking about consistency. That's what I'm saying. If we're going to criticize with consistency.
I appreciate the intent that you have to draw parallels. However, you know, the issue with parallels or parallel lines, don't you? Remember the old high school days about parallel lines? They never meet. That's why they're parallel lines. They don't meet. What we need is a bit more intersection, not parallel lines. Parallel lines are called parallel lines because they can go on forever and ever, but they do not meet. You're confused. You're making parallel arguments, and that's my point. They're parallel arguments, but they're not necessarily intersecting. So the intention that you have to draw meaning from one situation and transfer it to another is not going to work. Look for where there is an intersection. And then you got my full attention. Thanks. Always great to talk with you and always appreciative of your contribution. Bill from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes. Good afternoon, Nutrice, and to the
Hi.
PRN audience. I'm sitting here listening to the discussion, and I just had to call and rescue you. Because
I'm good. You know, I love it. Because, you know, there's goodness in his heart. And
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And extreme passion and a real stance on his position. And I underline his. Disparaging the gentleman, but he's quite brilliant. I believe I've listened to him over the months, but at the same time, there's a wall that goes up when as you were trying to get him to understand, it's like comparing apples and oranges. One thing does not relate in any way to the other. And so there's just sort of a blindness there when you've tried desperately to get across, you know, sort of your effort to reach him to come to, you know, some understanding of the process of rationality in these matters. Everyone, we're starting off a new year. Everyone is exasperated. We've had a rough couple years under Mr. Donald J. And I think it's starting to show. We're starting to fray at the edges with everything that's going on. But still, keep up the great work that you're doing. And, you know, and to all in the audience, you know, we just have to be vigilant. And as you always say, it's about our survival. And we see that this government has no interest in our well-being. So that's what I have to say. And Happy New Year to you. And
thank you, Bill. And,
you're very welcome.
So
all right.
Thank you. I happen to really love Lincoln because his intention is in the right place. His intention is to engage, especially with points of view that are different from his. And that's great. That's what we need more of. I don't have to be right all the time, nor does he have to be right all the time. But we should at least be clear about the points that we are making. And in debating or having a strong conversation, you want to put forward your best and most credible argument and not mix a whole bunch of things up simply because you think it reinforces your point. Actually, it weakens your point and leaves you vulnerable, because then we get into a tug of war over things that really weren't germane to what it is we decided to talk about. We are now engaged with each other on who has the upper hand in dominating the other, and in terms of point of view. But that's not what conversation is about. That's not what debating is about. I could debate all day. And I don't have to like you. I don't have to hate you. I don't have to, you know, it doesn't matter about these things. What we're looking for is developing the skill and the ability to present your points of view in such a way that you don't leave yourself open for people to knock you down easily. That's you know, you build a strong case. And even if people disagree with you, there are no holes. there are no crevices where they could crawl into and dismantle your argument. So that is what we're after, developing those skills, and I am so delighted about that. I am always encouraged when Lincoln calls, because I know he's going to put me through the paces. I love it. I really do. Cece from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Eutrice Leeds.
That's me.
We love you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We love... Oh, let me turn this thing off. We love you. I tuned in. First of all, happy new you.
Thank you. And
yeah.
Same to you.
Happy, yeah. If we're not new, it's just another day. I want to just say that I tuned in the middle because I wasn't available. You were going over the parallels, parallel lines with Lincoln. And, you know, I thought about Lincoln. And of course, happy new you to the Lead Story Leaders, LEADERS, for 2019. And you have made such a contribution that we can't, I can't put it to words. You know, it's like when I miss the show, I am missing my education. I'm missing my expansion. And you have, you know, it's like one of your life purposes is to bring this to us. And I'm not alone in this thought. I've been thinking about Lincoln over the months, and he's a person that I connect to Bernie Sanders when he says run for office. I think Lincoln should run for office. And whatever office he runs.
Good candidate.
Say that again?
He would be a very good candidate. He'd make
awesome.
A very good debater.
He'd be awesome. I mean, he is awesome. Okay. I understand his MO. But he should run for office, whatever, you know, close or in the town that he is. But I mean, he's an awesome person. Of course, Bill and all the leaders are just, you know, amazing. I'm grateful, you know, when I see the year end and the year beginning. And I want to take the moment to mimic a Harvey from Berkeley, if I may. And of course, you know, I'm a student of numbers and work with them. And I spoke to you some time ago, and I mentioned that the 2018, 1 plus 8 is 9, which is endings, which is closure, which is not closure, but completion and weeding and pruning. And I believe that the trumpeter will be weeded and pruned out and so forth. And now we're, you know, with 100 new in office. It's just, you know, we have to do as you have trained us and coached us and advised us. We have to keep the Democrats' feet to the fire. We've got to, if they're not right, we've got to punish them. And, you know, this has all come from your broadcasting, your journalism, your, you know, the total you. So thank you, thank you, thank you for all that you have given, for what you have done, what you intend to do.
To cut you off, but I really feel very personally that it's a joint effort. We're all in this together, and we're all finding our way together. So my job is to provoke thought, to provoke people to examine ways of thinking, and to make sense of this world that we share, and to examine for contradictions. That's my job. And in that sense, we're in this together. This is a classroom for everybody, myself included.
Yes.
I used to run a classroom. I used to teach at the college level, and that's what I did. I did not personally give grades. The class did that. I trained the students to evaluate each other and set up the standards by which, if they're making a presentation, what constitutes a good presentation and what constitutes a kind of middle level and what constitutes a really terrible job. But they gave the grades. Not me. So this is what we do together.
Yes.
We grade each other all the time.
Yes, but you set the sails, though. You know, I have to say, you set the sails. You know, your intention, being on PRN, Gary's intention, you know, as well. It has proved to be a great pudding. Or a great gumbo. You know, it's a great gumbo because, you know, it just, I mean, you know, they say the greatest room is room for improvement, of course, and we're all wanting to improve. And, of course, you know, we're in the 2019, which is a 10, which is, you know, we're surging. We're lifting off, you know, we're lifting off the launching pad. And, of course, you know, your presence, your energy, your vibration, your frequency is key. Okay, there's only one you. There's only, you know, one in a million you. And so we just have to say it. We have to honor it. You'll just have to suck it up and tough it out. But Okay, it's not easy. You know what I mean? It's not easy for people born on the first. Okay, but you are tremendous. When I spoke to you last, you said to me, "Okay, so what are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do?" I said to you, "Well, I'm doing it," but that hasn't left. You know, that thought, that question, "What am I going to do?" And it resonates with me. It repeats itself. You know, which is an amazing thing, and I'm sure that's for others. So whatever you suggest, whatever you're thinking, we know it's a prompt. We know it's a message, and we know that it's, you know, physical as well as metaphysical. And our job for 2019, as Larry the Cable Guy says, get her done. So
get her done.
We appreciate you so much.
Thank you so much, Cece. I so appreciate your kind words and your wishes and your encouragement. They mean a lot to me. I really do mean that. Thanks so much. Well, we're going to close out with Tony from Florida. Tony, you'll have the last word today. You don't have a lot of time, but you have enough time to make a point.
Hi, Eutrice. I enjoy your show. I, for one, understand where Lincoln's coming from. You know, I enjoy Lincoln, listening to him. So Lincoln, keep up the good work, the good fight. But like him, I'm also disappointed with the duopoly. Already yesterday, you had the first Palestinian congresswoman, which I was excited about. But then she had to open her mouth, put her foot in her mouth, and cuss the president out in front of her child. So you're telling me Trump's a disgusting pig because of the way he talks, but then you're just going to do the same thing. Now, another point where I'm disgusted about the other side of the duopoly is that we have a humanitarian crisis on the border. They had an opportunity to pass a budget yesterday that could have included something to help out the the humanitarian crisis on the border. But what did they do? Same business as usual. Do nothing, Congress. So I don't really, you know, I'm not too excited about this Democratic Congress. The only good thing is they're going to put a check on Mr. Trump, and that's the only good thing about that. So I'm going to leave it there.
Okay. Well, enough said. Thank you. I agree with that. And I agree with your comment about Congresswoman Wade of Michigan. Most unfortunate that she used those words to, you know, talk about or call for Donald Trump's impeachment. She disgraced herself. She disgraced her family. She disgraced her constituents. She disgraced her office. She disgraced the Palestinian nation. This is not the way to behave. And she owes, if she's smart enough, she would really issue a contrite apology. This is not power. This is not woman power. This is a person who just lost her mind. And hopefully, I don't know if she can actually recoup from that, but it was not necessary. And it was hurtful to her even, and caused great embarrassment that I don't know that she could easily undo. But that's her job. Let her figure it out. It was most unfortunate to have somebody use those terms and those words in a setting in the National House, thinking that, oh, wow, I'm woman, hear me raw. You're wrong. You are dead wrong. And let's see whether she musters up the courage and the integrity to apologize to everybody for her conduct. Thanks for your call. All right, that brings us to the end of our program today. I really appreciate spending time with you. I consider it my classroom because I'm learning. I continue to learn. And I insist that we do this together. This is our project together. And we pool our ideas, we pool our thoughts. It's not important whether we agree or disagree with each other. But it's important that we offer our thoughts in such a way that we can tell people clearly what it is we're thinking and why we think that way. All right. Have yourselves a great weekend. Surround yourselves with great positive-minded people. And we'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye.